The Farm Bill process has been very long, very hard, and no doubt frustrating for all who have been involved. Some of us on the Senate Ag Committee have participated in two committee markups and two floor debates for this bill, and that's over a period of two Congresses. I voted for and supported the bill at every one of those junctures. I believe our country needs a good farm policy, which means, of course, an adequate and yet limited safety net for farmers, because so much about farming is beyond the control of the farmers, and I'm not talking just about natural disasters. Without a doubt, our farmers then face real uncontrollable risk every year. The Farm Bill provides farmers then with a number of programs to mitigate risk. Agriculture remains a changing industry. Unbelievable technological advancements are taking place right before our eyes. Farmers can now control irrigation equipment and monitor grain bins on the phone from the other side of the world. Agricultural technology is progressing so quickly. 5 years from now, when we debate the next Farm Bill, autonomous tractors may well be doing a considerable amount of the field work in America. Farm policy has also changed over time. Unfortunately, the majority of farm program benefits have started going to a concentrated number of farmers. The fact is, 10% of the farmers, and those obviously would be the wealthy farmers, get 70% of the benefits from a farm bill. One reason for this is that the current farm policy offers farmers essentially unlimited subsidies if they hire the right lawyers. As a farmer, a citizen, and a legislator, I believe it is wrong to expect or even to allow the government to give unlimited support to my farm or any farm, especially since our country has a record $17 trillion national debt. During the first full Senate farm debate in the summer of 2012, so the last Congress, my payment limit reform was adopted by a vote of 75-24 here on the floor of this very body. During the first round of floor debate in the House, Mr. Fortenberry, this Congress, Mr. Fortenberry from Nebraska, offered the same reforms, and they were adopted there in the House by a vote of 230-194. Congress has spoken then and overwhelmingly agrees in both bodies with my common sense approach of limitations on the amount that one farming operation can get. Now, wouldn't anyone think that policy, which is widely supported in both bodies of Congress and which saves taxpayers nearly $400 million, would be untouchable when it comes to a conference committee? The rules of this institution, the Senate, outline that. Senate Rule 28, if anyone would like to look it up. However, once again, behind closed doors, Washington decided to intentionally screw up common sense. This conference bill increases the payments available through countercyclical program, now called Price Loss Coverage, or PLC for short, by 150% compared to what this Congress had already agreed upon. And yet, I have anyone to tell me a single legitimate reason why that change could be made. Additionally, the powers that be in this town have proven they learned nothing from the World Trade Organization Brazil cotton case. That dispute has resulted in the U.S. paying a $143 million fine per year to Brazilian cotton farmers because our farm program for cotton doesn't meet the rules of international trade. Now, this farm bill doubles down on the same market distorting principles that brought us that very same trade dispute. The original payment limit reforms that this Congress approved also eliminated abuses through what is commonly known as quote-unquote actively engaged loophole. To sum up this loophole, it makes it very easy for non-farmers to get farm subsidies, probably those that go to the extent to hire a lawyer. This results in the largest 10% of the farms then, as I said before, getting 70% of the farm program's benefits, as I've already mentioned. Yet, the conference committee, in another brazen act of manipulation, eliminates my simple, enforceable reform. Because I happen to think that non-farming managers per, I think that one non-farming manager per entity is more than generous. And over the years, it's been much violated. So we just simply say it ought to be one non-farm manager per farm and no more. But it's been a lot worse. In my language, the language accepted by this body, reformed that. But as I've indicated a couple times, the conference committee took it out. The language in the bill now says, instead of the way it passed the Senate and passed the House on the floor of the House, we'll have the opportunity to review and fix the actively engaged loophole, but only if they should choose so. In other words, the Secretary of Agriculture doesn't happen to. Now, I happen to know that Secretary Vilsack is sympathetic to what I've been trying to accomplish. So maybe he will be able to make something good out of what I think is a very bad provision in this bill that might actually make it very difficult for him to do that. Now, under this provision, USDA could have fixed this problem, or even under existing law, I should say, USDA could have fixed this problem at any point since it is the result of their rulemaking. So giving, as this compromise does, the USDA power they already have and claiming reform, that happens to be a true and true too often example of a Washington hat trick. The conferees didn't stop at just kicking the decision over to the department. They also tied the USDA's hands with unnecessary requirements that must be met before action can even be taken. And that's why I say it's going to be difficult for Secretary Vilsack. I hope he can find ways to accomplish what I want to accomplish. As I said, I think that's where his heart is. So I hope that Secretary Vilsack, and I can even say the Obama administration, finally use this authority to produce a strong, enforceable rule regarding the number of people who can be eligible for farm subsidies from taxpayers. In other words, people that are actually farming. I'm certainly going to offer them my thoughts on this issue. And maybe I should explain why I said even the Obama administration beyond Secretary Vilsack, because in this president's budget more than once, and in the Bush budget more than once, presidents, including this president, has suggested these reforms to save money. This year, I said about $400 million. Actually, according to CBO, $387 million. The Government Accountability Office released a report in October 2013 that clearly outlines the problems with the actively engaged loophole. One farming partnership that they highlighted was composed of 22 LLCs with 20 different owners and 16 managers who got their eligibility through the actively engaged loophole. So you understand why the bill that passed the Senate and the House said one manager. At least four of the managers I've referred to from that operation even live out of the state, while several others live in cities around the state well outside of commuting distance. Additionally, just yesterday, it was reported that a large farming operation in the state of Illinois is being fined $5.3 million because they were exploiting taxpayers for farm subsidies. In this case, the government determined their business structure was intentionally designed to evade those payment limitations that are even in existing law, with the exact fake entity structures that my provisions would have nearly eliminated. I want to quote the U.S. Attorney Jim Lewis, who handled that case. And here's his quote. "We're pleased with this favorable resolution of the government's claim of misuse of farm subsidy programs. These programs are designed to help farmers withstand market price volatility and the intrinsic risks associated with farming from year to year. Any attempt to exploit the system to take more than one's fair share is an improper use of government funds that erodes the public confidence in such programs and threatens their continued viability." End of comment of U.S. Attorney Jim Lewis, who's won that case against these farmers. And they will be fined that $5.3 million. I wish that the U.S. attorney could have been part of the Farm Bill Conference Committee. His logic and expertise would have really helped. If a farm's business model depends on lawyers setting up complicated Mickey Mouse legal structures just to get more government subsidies, perhaps the owners of that entity are in the wrong business. So my provisions would have limited subsidies going to a few thousand people who are very well off and, quite frankly, don't need unlimited farm payments from the government and probably aren't even involved with dirt under their fingernails, especially since, by definition, they would be people then who don't actually work on farms. If we can't cut subsidies that go to non-farming millionaires, how will we ever find the courage then to fix other great entitlement problems that we have in this country? With all that said, there are a few things this bill does that are good. The dairy program's provisions have ended up more market-oriented than were where we started, which I believe is a very good thing. I'm glad the crop insurance program will remain strong for farmers across the country, and the nutrition program reforms are welcome. In the end, I have to make a judgment of the bill as a whole. Every member of this Senate has to. I believe this bill, sadly, is a missed opportunity. The Congressional Budget Office has the final savings in this bill of only 16 6/10 billion. That's a pretty small amount compared to the fact that it will spend nearly $1 trillion. Now, I think my colleagues know that I'm a certain person that plays by the rules. So I played by the rules with these reforms that were adopted 2 years ago, 75-24. Not debated or voted on this year because they were part of the bill that passed the United States Senate and then went to the House of Representatives and were voted on there 230-194. So we played by the rules. A majority of both bodies support these reforms. Yet, in the end, just a small group of people with a single-minded intent to keep unlimited farm subsidies flowing out the door proved that Congress deserves its 12% approval rating. I want to be clear. I strongly support the business of agriculture. I've been involved in farming my whole life. My son, Robin, operates our family farm. I understand the industry. Growing wholesome foods to feed the world has always been one of the noblest occupations, in my opinion. But if I were to vote yes on the bill, it would be an endorsement of the egregious manipulation of my payment limitation reforms behind closed doors. I cannot, in good conscience, do that. Therefore, I will oppose the Agricultural Act of 2014. Just to kind of clarify, do you understand? I hope everybody understands that we had the moral authority of a majority of the Senate, the moral authority of a majority of the House of Representatives, the moral majority of the people of this country, who I believe would say it's a good thing to save $387 million. And yet, that moral authority was avoided by conferees who thought, to heck with what the majority of the Senate or a voting majority of the House of Representatives of 230 to 194. It doesn't mean anything. We can do whatever we want to do. We can waste that $387 million. We can continue to give farm payments to farmers who aren't farming or to people who aren't farming. We can continue to let 10% of the biggest farmers get 70% of the benefits of the farm program, which in the end then helps subsidize big farmers getting bigger. And there's nothing wrong with big farmers getting bigger, but you shouldn't subsidize it. Drive up the price of farmland, drive up the price of cash rent, so our young farmers can't get started farming. If you want to preserve the family farm, that's one of the things that's very, very important. So I've said my part, and I hope that I'm around 5 years from now so that I can try this once again, because I don't intend to give up on this process. Now, 5 years from now is the next farm bill, probably. Maybe there will be opportunities between now and then. I intend to take advantage of those opportunities. I yield the floor.